Now on Life Matters, it's time for this week's Modern Dilemma. This is a chance to unpack some of the sticky predicaments we can all find ourselves in and which we often need a lateral opinion on to help guide us through, and we certainly get lateral in this slot, I'm finding. We take a modern dilemma and we turn it into something more complicated than it ever began, which makes it so interesting. So do keep sending your dilemmas through via our website, and we are getting lots. Now, two listeners contacted us with a very similar problem this week, so we thought we'd combine them for the purposes of our discussion today. Rochelle, I think it is, or Rachel, wrote to us, "I've recently got engaged and my fiance and I are struggling to keep our guest list down. How do you explain to people, both family and friends or friends of parents, that we have to keep the numbers down? And people keep inviting themselves when they find out we are engaged as well. What do I tell them when that happens? Help!" And May wrote with a similar predicament about deciding whether or not to invite partners of her friends to her wedding. And I have to say, since we posted this on the Life Matters Facebook page last night, people are writing nothing short of essays on Facebook. Joining me in the studio to help out with this one today is Dr. Doris McIlwain from the Department of Psychology at Macquarie University. Welcome back, Doris.
Thank you.
And Associate Professor John Armstrong, who is a philosopher and a senior advisor to the Vice-Chancellor at Melbourne Uni. Welcome to the hot seat again, John.
Hello.
I rather like the Facebook comment. One Life Matters listener wrote to us, Joy. Her solution, elope. But a number of other people have commented on the Life Matters Facebook page that it's their wedding and it should be their choice. But of course, the choices we make are always bound up with other considerations, aren't they, Doris?
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole thing about opening up a personal relationship to this sort of civic order, in a sense, is what marriage is all about. It's not really about being an individual any longer. It's a rite of passage from being a unique sort of individual person to being publicly recognised as a couple. And you are sort of, you know, inviting comment on should this union go ahead, in a sense.
So it's all bound up in obligations and our relationship to other people.
Yeah, because I see ethics and etiquette as being two quite different things. Etiquette's much more about people having their proper place, and it's much more culturally and subculturally specific. And also, like, there are fashions in terms of time as well with etiquette. And I don't know how precisely spelled out it is, but I certainly think it's highly conservative, and it doesn't necessarily capture what's unique and particular and personal about you.
We'll come to etiquette in a moment, because I wonder if in the past etiquette might have bailed us out of this dilemma and we just knew who to invite because etiquette told us so. John, why would a wedding guest list cause so much anxiety? Is it something about the very fact that it's the wedding that is the source of stress here?
Well, I think there is something there that I believe that we build up this sort of longing that the wedding will be this perfect occasion and it will symbolise our happiness and the goodness of this relationship. And this puts an intense pressure on the occasion. It's really the contrast, I think, here between the desire to control the wedding as an event and other people's sort of desire to come in and participate. And that's where the war is. The people want their wedding to be their kind of fantasy ideal party.
Yeah.
And because, as Doris says, a wedding is in many ways a public event, lots of people assume that they have a right to participate in it. And it's this conflict that's really causing the problem.
Well, John, a number of people have got in touch saying, well, hang it, it's your wedding, you should do whatever you want. But is that very helpful advice?
I think they're right.
You do?
Yes, I do.
On what basis?
Well, you're paying for the wedding. If you have a wedding in a church, I mean, a traditional wedding in a church, and then afterwards people go for the breakfast and they sit in a field on trestle tables, there isn't very much money involved. But once you start sort of party planning and having elaborate meals and so on, it's just a private occasion, and other people have got zero right to come in unless they pay. And but, I think it's probably a lot about money.
But Doris, isn't, I mean, a marriage is about as much about the two individuals as the context, the family, that they have to have good relationships with their family and friends forevermore, don't they?
Yeah.
So, interestingly, Veronica writes on her Facebook page, if you can stretch yourself and invite those people who will be hurt by not being on the guest list, you are unlikely to regret it. Go more casual, as others have suggested. No chair covers, no fancy gift to take away, a family car to get you there instead of hiring limos. Could turn into more guests. People are only hurt because they care about you and want to celebrate with you. Doris.
Look, I think it's a matter of balancing the agency, which is, you know, how much of your contemporary self can you take forward into this new identity. So balance that agency with the communion, because this group is going to be the group that not only you will take forward as your supporters into the future, but insofar as you're welcoming them to witness you at that fragile point of transition when you're not what you were and you're not yet what you will become, feelings run really high. And they not only sort of witness that transition, but in a sense their presence sculpts that transition. And so, yes, you don't want the bad fairy there who's going to change the sort of emergent group feeling, or someone that you experience as a bad fairy.
Well, that could be the mother-in-law or the father-in-law.
And yeah, you've got zilch chance.
Or the brother or the sister. It could even be your best friend. It's very complex, this.
Exactly. But I suppose, you know, given how conservative an institution it is, you really are opening yourself up to regulation in a sense. And so there's only so much agency that one can exercise in that. It's the nature of the institution, I think.
But John, is the institution changing? Is it becoming a much more personalised sort of affair outside of the offerings of etiquette and expectations of etiquette in relation to who we should invite? Some people have two weddings to accommodate two different crowds.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a very good idea. I think the core of it is actually the difficulty of sustaining good relationships over a long period of time. And we use marriage and weddings as a way of trying to keep together something that's precious to us, but we know is very fragile, which is long-lasting relationships that are reasonably satisfying. But look, I think that the crucial issue here is about who are our allies in this very difficult, wonderful but difficult project. Who are the allies we need to help us keep our relationship going?
Describing a marriage as a wonderful but difficult project.
And an ally as war.
Sounds ominous.
That's probably apt historically.
Don't have fun or anything, will you? John, sorry.
Go to a fun fair if you want fun. God, I suddenly realise I'm thinking about my marriage. not anyway.
Careful now, sir.
Allies. If people are so easily hurt, are they really going to be able to help you in your future life? And I think we're much too apologetic towards people who are so easily hurt. I mean, it's their fault. Why are they hurt? Basically, you don't like them enough. That's their fault.
Goodness me. I mean, just to help out our two listeners who wrote this week, what would you tell them about, what would you tell your friends, your family, those members who you can't invite as you were preparing the list, John?
I'd set a specific number quite low and just say, that's them. I'd tie my hands. I'd get someone to, I'd book a room that could only hold that number of people. And you then just go through the list, and that's the absolute limit. And it's no longer, you don't have to say to a person, I don't like you enough, even though that's the truth. You just say, I'm really sorry, we can only invite 51 people.
Doris, is it the case that you don't invite people because you don't like them enough? Or is it, there's a sort of more careful curation going on here when you're preparing a list? I'm interested in what your view is about what May and Rachel should say to the people that they're inviting and those who they can't invite.
Yeah, look, the way that it's framed in the dilemma is it invokes a wider issue, I think, as John says, which is, what are the attitudes that you have to the partners of your friends. Like, you know, all of us, we've got a sort of myriad of possibilities within our personality, and different friends call forth different aspects about our own personality. Now, sometimes what you hook up with in relation to a friend is different from what they find in a partner. And so you may or may not get on really well with their partner. So I suppose I would talk to my friend and say, look, the numbers are tight. Would it really spoil your experience if we didn't invite partners in this instance? Because you don't want to lose a friend over a ceremony, in a sense. So I think speak. I always think speak.
Always think speak.
I always think speak.
That's right. I mean, the trick is that, I mean, you know, your friends with their partners are there to celebrate you and your partner. I mean, your friends may not like your partner, the partner that you're marrying. You know, there's a kind of two-way process here, isn't
well,
there?
Well, Natasha.
how do we bail these people out? Do you think honesty is the best policy here, John?
No, I don't. I think what we need are external constraints. I think that you have to, as it were, tie your hands, lash yourself to the mast so that you can't make it too personal. You just say, oh, look, I'm sorry, it's just the size of the room, and not go into the personal details of your real concerns here. And that would be my instinct.
And Doris, what about you? I mean, in the past, this question of etiquette might have bailed us out,
yes.
But etiquette has changed, hasn't it? Even though you still hold dear the kind of traditional notions of marriage as a sort of entree into civic society.
Yeah, I don't hold it dear, I must say, but and I'm barely civilised, so I'm certainly not an expert on etiquette. But I sort of see marriage as an institution that was about, you know, patching up alliances after wars or the exchange of daughters, and I think it's very difficult to reconcile that with, you know, contemporary values and, you know, a way forward, you know, being the person that you truly want to be. It is a moment where society kind of floods into the personal, in a sense. And and I think that etiquette is a sort of time-resistant bearer of culture, really. And it's the question for me is, do you respect the bases by which etiquette is set up, and how subordinate to that do you want to be? That's the modern dilemma about etiquette, I think.
Can I just, we got an interesting comment from Vanessa who gives us an example. This is a big issue that's been faced by my family and dealt with in a couple of ways. So one suggestion was a big engagement party and let everyone know it is to be a small wedding. Or another suggestion was send the invitation to a household or a family group inviting 2 to 4 guests to attend of the family's choice.
Wow.
John, what do you make of that? You're actually turning the...
They can have the fight.
But isn't that... It's obviously fun. Worked for them. This solution worked really well, and no one felt that they were excluded. It was left to the family to decide who attends.
I think that's great. Outsource the distress.
Doris, what do you make of that?
Look, I think it's a very good strategy, but I think John's right. It would be outsourcing the distress.
What about appealing to hip pocket instead and saying, look, we'd love to have all of you here, but we just can't afford it.
Yeah. Well, you'd have to... I mean, that. I guess quite often that will be true, but I think that what you're trying to do there is get round the personal confrontation.
Of course.
And that's a good thing. So I think, yeah, use money to get around it. That's one of the things that money does. It can help us avoid making things too personal.
Well, I think we've probably confused our listeners a little more. Which is a good thing, as Doris suggests. And there are many comments coming in with all sorts of practical suggestions on the Life Matters Facebook page. Just search at RN, search RN Life Matters. Now, can I thank you both? Doris McIlwain from the Department of Psychology at Macquarie University.
Thank you.
And John Armstrong, philosopher and senior advisor to the Vice-Chancellor at Melbourne University. Always fantastic to have you both on the show.
Thanks very much.